because they did medical science, but instead of talking about being sick and making people healthy, the idea is just be healthy and then nothing can affect you. No disease can affect you. So Ayurveda is not. And in Ayurveda, when you eat, you go from bitter taste. First you take bitter, anything that has a bitter flavor. Then you go to greens like spinach and the likes. And then you go to like more opulent type of vegetables with sauce and this and that, and maybe something fried or whatever. And then you go to like sweet tastes. And the end of the meal must always be sweet. That's how you finish it off. And even in the French cuisine, it is the same. Yeah? It also goes to light, but ends with something sweet. So in this way, in kirtan also, we dance and jump around, and then we get a little sweet and more meditative. There are many flavors. Spiritual life is about transcendental flavor. It's not like about emptying the mind. Emptying the mind is that's also something. Obviously, when the mind is full with problems, then you want to empty the mind. But when your mind is full of good things, why would you want to empty the mind? It doesn't make sense. You know, when your mind is filled with feelings of happiness, there's no need to empty it. It's only when it's full of negativity that you need to empty it. Yeah? So therefore, the idea of emptying the mind is not complete. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't offer us this process of emptying the mind. Rather the opposite. It says, don't worry so much about all these, whatever negativity there is in the mind, just fill it. Fill it with positive impressions and positive influences, because these positive things, they will push out. They will push out the negative, whatever it is. It will just be pushed aside and eventually pushed out. The example that is sometimes given is, say you have a glass of water and there's a drop of ink in that water. How do you get it out? Just add water. Just keep on adding water, and at one point it will be clear. So with that idea, keep on adding positive elements into the consciousness, and eventually the consciousness will be clear from all whatever negativity is there. Fear, greed, anger, lust, envy, you name it. All the kind of things that we don't want. Nowadays, that knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, we find it also in psychology. There's a whole trend in psychology called positive psychology, and which aims at the same thing. Just add positive values in your life, just positive activity, and eventually everything becomes positive. Makes sense. So that is the approach of the Gita. The Gita does give us an analysis of like what is positive and what is negative. It does give us some values. The Bhagavad Gita divides the world into three major categories known as tamas, rajas, and sattva, or ignorance, passion, and goodness. It's that there are things that bring down the consciousness, that make one dull, lazy. For example, drugs. If you take whatever, either legal or illegal drugs, after they make the consciousness dull. That's obvious. So in that way, that's not helping. It is said, then there's the mode of passion. The city, of course, when you're downtown, Swanston Street, it's all passion. You see people dressed up in all kinds of costumes. In the 80s, I lived in Australia for a while, and I was staying quite far away from Melbourne. I was staying just on a farm which was 10,000 hectares, 40 by 25 kilometers, so it was a big farm, and it was just between Victoria and South Australia, and there was, you had to go from Mildura to a small town called Wentworth, then you had to drive 80 k's over a dirt track, and then you would come to our farm. And there were only kangaroos and like, and galahs, you know, lots of them, you know. And what shall I say? So it was outback Australia, and I stayed there for about 4 months before, without ever coming off the farm. Right? It's just like you eat what comes off the land straight. Right? You go into the garden, cut some vegetables, and cook them completely fresh instead of. So I never saw it, but when I went after 4 months to a supermarket, it all looked so dry and shriveled up, you know? I said, God, how can they eat this stuff? Right? Normally it looks okay, but after 4 months, like there, it really looked like not very nice. And well, then I came to Melbourne, and I remember I was in Swanston Street, and at the time there were people with plateau shoes, you know, like this, these kind of soles and spikes and all kinds of things, or all kinds of colors, and I just looked at it like, whoa, where am I, right? I mean, you know, although I am from the Netherlands and I've seen a few things, but still, after all, being on that farm, it looked really far out. Whereas when you're there every day, it's I guess it's normal. But what's going on in the city is the mode of passion. The mode of passion. And the mode of passion is about squeezing the maximum amount of enjoyment out of life. Let's increase the opportunities. Let's somehow or other just let's really get a bit more juice going in life. Yes, take this pill. Yes, drink this energy. It gives you power. It unleashes untapped powers. Yes, sounds good. I want some more power. I want some more enjoyment. Of course, it shows something. It shows that someone is not satisfied. If we're looking for so many things, it means you're not satisfied with what you have, as simple as that. It means, therefore, in the mode of passion, we're chasing after something we don't have, satisfaction. The mode of goodness is different. The mode of goodness is more reflective. The mode of goodness is more peaceful. It is more thoughtful. So activities like meditation or the chanting of mantras are more about creating inner satisfaction, not so much running around here and there and everywhere and trying to, you know, find something new to turn us on. It's like yesterday you bought a new watch and it was the state of the art, and now there's something new which pairs with your phone and you can't look at the old thing anymore. You know, you go, like, oh God, how can I use this watch? It's outdated. Right? Always, but that is passion. And we see that the society is designed like that. The modern lifestyle is designed in passion because economy is what counts, right? It's money. So, you know, we want you to buy even if you don't need it. Consumerism and all these things. So that is passion. So from the Bhagavad Gita, we get a clear perspective on this and say, it says, passion doesn't bring happiness. Passion brings temporary fruits. For a little while, one enjoys them, and then it leaves one empty. So that is fundamentally, activities in passion bring emptiness. Activities in ignorance, like taking various intoxicants, or you were not, no cleanliness, let's say, you never take bath, or you just don't clean the house, or just that's all ignorance. You eat things that are rotten or foul, ignorance, ignorance, ignorance. You drink things that are undrinkable. Then, of course, yeah, the consciousness goes down. So Bhagavad Gita is saying whatever goes into the consciousness will remain there in a lasting impression and influence the state of our consciousness. So the whole idea is take in things of goodness and gradually the consciousness will be elevated to goodness. And that's, of course, what many people try to do when they become, when they get involved with yoga or become vegetarian or vegan or something to that effect. They try and bring more elements of goodness in their life. So, but that is still material. That's not enough. That's not what the Bhagavad Gita is about. The Bhagavad Gita is simply analyzing the material nature and saying there are these three modes of nature. But there is more than that. There is also three modes. There's also a transcendental aspect. It goes beyond the three modes. The transcendental side is, is where one sees that beyond matter, there is more. There's also beyond the nose, there is also more. There's also a place where noses don't influence the consciousness, where nothing material influences the consciousness. It's on the spiritual plane. So the Bhagavad Gita explains that besides the temporary material world, there's also an eternal world. And in the eternal world is where we, is in a way where we belong. The Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning, describes the self and explains that the self cannot be the body. You cannot say, this is me. It's not possible because the body is temporary. Whereas the Bhagavad Gita describes there's another aspect to our existence, which is eternal. And that is the soul. The soul exists eternally. Nahanyate hanyamani sarire. It is not killed when the body is killed. The soul is alive eternally. And therefore, it is said, sometimes we find in Western philosophy a concept that the soul is related to the body. Like if you look at Aristotle, for example. Aristotle, who is like, you can say, the founder of modern thinking, really. So Aristotle's idea of the soul is that human beings have one kind of souls, animals have another kind of soul, and plants, again, another kind of soul. Because Aristotle is saying the essence of what you are, that is the soul. So the essence of the humanity in us, right? So that is the soul of what we are. He says, but the animal has an animalistic type of soul. And like that, he makes that distinction. Of course, later, that was borrowed by theologians who then said, yes, animals have no soul, right? And that, of course, justified eating the animals. Now, when I went to Africa and I was teaching Krishna consciousness, you know, like bhakti yoga to African people. And I was in this village and I met this student, very intelligent student, and he told me, he said, white men have no soul. And he didn't mean about music, you know.
He was just hungry.
Well, yeah. Yes, I sort of felt like, jeez. Maybe it's time to go, you know. It was shocking. It was really like, you know, I heard all kinds of things, but that shocked me a bit. I guess like, poof. So yeah, you can see how the animals feel, right? When they are not having any soul. So Bhagavad Gita is saying that no, all living beings have the same soul. The same soul. The bodies are temporary and the bodies can change according to the state of consciousness. According to Bhagavad Gita, an animal can become human and human can become animal according to the consciousness. If a human being develops an animalistic state of consciousness, then it can become an animal. The one difference between animal and human being is that human being is held responsible for the actions. Whatever you do, we are accountable, and animals are not accountable. Human beings make new karma. Animals, they have only old karma from before. So they don't make new. So an animal can do anything, no karma. But a human being, whatever we do, there's karma. If we accidentally step on an insect, then there is karma. So we have to be very careful to not kill, to not cause suffering, and all these things. If we steal, we get karma. If a magpie comes in and steals something, no karma. They steal, make God. So therefore, human beings that are too much addicted to stealing, possibly they can become magpies in their next life. Right? Why not? It glitters, you know, that's great. Yes, these things are possible. It depends on the consciousness. So Bhagavad Gita maps out how we are here in this world. And then it points out, but there is another world, an eternal world, and that is where the eternal soul belongs. That is where we actually will find peace. It is at that stage that we speak about self-realization. So when we are realizing, when we are there, then we are that we are on that spiritual platform, then we are fully self-realized. So we did a little song and a dance, and it was nice. And just because music and dancing is nice, but there was something else, because it wasn't just ordinary music, but there was a mantra involved and so on, and therefore it got a spiritual dimension, the whole thing. The mantra is spiritual. It is sound that comes from the spiritual platform. When we are singing the mantra and dancing on the mantra, then it's not only that it's fun on the material plane, but there is a spiritual dimension. And the spiritual dimension means that the mantra itself comes from the spiritual platform, uplifts us to the spiritual platform. First of all, it frees us from negative influences. So no need for us to empty the mind. It automatically empties our stock of karma. We all carry some karma. I don't know about your karma. I know about mine. I mean, you know, I have this weird kind of karma. I mean, what shall I say? Things happen to me that are like, well, outrageous. Like, I was in a room in a building with, like, you know, stone walls, everything, not like boards like here, but real was, and suddenly, at about 6 in the morning, I hear someone, it sounds like someone has a sledgehammer and is hitting the wall. And it sounds like they're coming through the wall, you know. I'm looking at the wall. Next moment, the wall cracks and the floor cracks. Right? And, well, I didn't know I could fly, but I could. I could fly. Not only could I fly, but I managed to grab my my valuables and fly out of the room within less than 30 seconds. And I was in the top of the building, and it turned out there was an earth tremor, and there was a whiplash in the superstructure of the building, and that cracked open my wall and my floor. Now, as it happened, I thought, and now the Godzilla is going to come out, or something like that, you know, some dinosaur or some big creature now will stick its head into my room. Anyway, that didn't happen. But so you get an idea of my karma. Always strange things happen, the unexpected. What to do? Everyone has his karma. Some people have karma, rather the opposite from mine, that nothing ever happens. Nothing. Just nothing. You know, it's just called nothing ever happens karma. You just sit there looking out of the window, hoping that something's going to happen, but nothing's going to happen. Just absolutely nothing. Nothing ever happens karma. So you have many varieties in the world of karma. Yes. You can have the always win the lottery karma, or you can have the karma, you know, like whatever Murphy's Law karma, you know, whatever can go wrong will go wrong karma. Yeah.
So
karma is simply the result of all the things we did before. But when we are chanting the mantra or doing anything else that is spiritual by nature, it will immediately remove all that karma. Not completely, it's a gradual thing, but it begins to remove that karma. So that is a good beginning. That's the first beginning. So we get relief from all these karmic reactions. But that's not the goal. The goal is not to become free from karma, although karma is no fun. Bad karma, let's just say. Good karma, okay. Yeah. It's just coming. Yeah. Someone like Bill Gates, how did he get so rich? He was smart, but at the same time, it was karma that he got so rich. So many smart people don't have a cracker. Yeah. It's like, it's not automatically when you're qualified that that you'll be successful. Not like that. Yeah. You may be a PhD and so on and not get a job. Well, what to do? That's the nature of karma. So karma controls many things, actually. And so to become uplifted from that is a good thing. But we want to go a step further. We want to relate to the eternal spiritual platform, a world that exists, a spiritual world, where there's no influence of karma at all, and where the soul is in a liberated state. Not alone, but there with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and so many devotees in a domain, in the domain which is governed by devotion. Here, in this world, devotion is hard to find. I used to, when I came out of school, I didn't know what to do. I was thinking, what shall I do now with my life? One thing I knew, I'm not going to become like my father. That was quite clear. Because he was a businessman, and Even when I was a kid, my mother used to say, "Quiet, your father's coming home. He has a headache." And then he would come home, and he would have a headache. So I thought she had mystic power or something. No phones. And I said, "How does she know he has a headache? But it was easy because he always had a headache. That's what it was. And I was supposed to take over his business. And I thought, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to take over his headache as well. So I wasn't so convinced. I wasn't so sure, you know, is this the way to go? So definitely I'm not going to do that. But what to do then? I wasn't sure. So I thought of a trick. That what I'll do is I'll travel to India. It's interesting and very cheap. So India in those days was cheap and best. So I got some money together and I worked in the with the post for 2 months, and I did night shifts, right? And they paid double, and then it was really good. So in those days it wasn't automated, and basically I had racks with bags in front of me, and they all had a little shield on them saying with a number, and I had bundles and they were also numbered, and I had to just throw them in the right number, you know, so a number 7, you know, a number 6, a number 8, a 3, you know. And so I took it as a sport, you know, throwing bundles, and I was getting really good at it, you know, like, and if you do it all the time, every night for 2 months, you can see how good you get at it, right? So I was like, throwing bundles like this, you know. And then one day, these two big guys, they came and they said, "Stop it. Stop it right now. We don't want this here. You got it." "Yes, sir, got it." They were a lot bigger than I was. So I got it, and they didn't want it because I was working too fast. Working too fast? You're spoiling it here. Because that's the idea, you know. I mean, don't work and get the money. Hey, you got it made, you know. Do nothing and get paid for it. What, you know, that's perfection. What more do you want? Come on. And yeah, then, but how different is the world of devotion? How different? Where you do the best you can. Where you do the best you can. That's different. Yeah? I mean, it's sort of, if you really do something and you give it your very best, it sort of leaves you with this strange feeling of, like, sort of, you know, I did it, you know, I did something, you know? I really did this. So, and when we do that for Krishna, we don't even get paid for it, right? But we do the best we can, and that is bhakti yoga. It becomes very exciting, right? It becomes something that really gives us a sense of satisfaction that you just don't get if you just sort of try and make what you can and do as little as possible for it. That exploitive mood is very different. Yeah, so I got the money, I went to India, and I went overland on a bus. There's a long ride from Amsterdam. About 3 weeks with stops for visas over, and there were parts where there were no roads and driving through dry riverbeds, and it was quite a ride. And it was just a time when in India, when between India and Pakistan, there was a lot of tension. So they wouldn't allow any vehicles from Pakistan to go across the Indian border. So everything had to be unloaded, offloaded, and carried across by coolies or whatever, and we had to walk. So, okay, I walked into India, and as I came into India, there was like a big lane with palm trees on the side, and at the end of that, there was a man with a big turban and a huge mustache. I think he's putting goat pins at night. Like that. Huge. And he sat with a uniform, and he was sitting at a desk under a tree. So I really like that, you know, offices under a tree. It sort of was something you don't see in the West, you know. And I was thinking, wow, how nice, you know, just under a tree. Now that's the, and then he said, so why have you come to India? I said, like, well, I heard that India is a very spiritual country. He said, very good, very good. Then you will go to Benares. You will go to Benares. I said, yes, of course I will go, because you don't argue with someone with a uniform. Right? So I said, yes. But, you know, the man said, yes, you will go, because I will buy you the ticket. And he said, meet me at 6 o'clock at the station. And I did, and he bought me the ticket. So what a welcome to a country, right? Usually say, all right, you know, what you come here for, you know, what you got, show this, open your bag, you know, anything to declare, you know, $50,000 fine, you know, you're going to be dead and smuggle anything in, right, just that you know, this is Australia, you know. Oh, welcome, you know. So did that get in my bag? but it was very different, you know. They just offered to pay me. He offered to pay my ticket, and then I went on the train. And the train was going to Benares, long ride, and it was packed. And there were people sitting in the luggage rack. There was one man in the luggage rack, and he was chanting a mantra, and he was just. The whole time, ram 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 ram. 1 hour, ram 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 ram. 2 hours, ram 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 ram. He was going strong. Then there were some Muslims. They were doing their prayers. They were going down, doing namaz, whatever. Then there was a married couple, and the wife was serving the husband. I'd never seen anything like that, you know, and from a different culture, you know. And then, in the end, this old man comes to me and says, son, to me, he says, son, everything is in God's hands. And I was wondering, did I get on the right train? You know? No, really. Maybe this one's going to heaven, you know? It's just like, gosh, it was just something else. So much spirituality was there at the time. Now, this is almost, God, what is it? It was it's about 46 years ago. What can I say? God, can you see how old I am, right? anyway, 46 years ago, it was a different India. Like, so many of these people, they were not even born in India. They don't know that India. It was a different India. But it was very nice, in a sense, because there were still a lot of people who were putting spiritual values before material values, and a spiritual goal before a material goal. And then we just say, life is not about endlessly increasing our bank balance, endlessly increasing the facility. Whatever we need whatever we need to survive in a nice way, in a good way, that must be there. But beyond it, beyond it, there is more to it, something deeper. We cannot just work only for the body. We got to do something for the soul. According to the Bhagavad Gita, the soul is eternal. The soul of all living beings is equal. Therefore, all living beings must be respected. And the goal of life is to attain an eternal destination, which is to work on the eternal relationship with the Supreme and to act in devotion, to live a life, to do everything with devotion. But not devotion to the boss, devotion to the Supreme Lord. It's just devotion to the government. Yeah? It's like in Sydney, there's a park opposite of our temple in North Sydney, and there's a memorial, and it says, the greatest thing a man can do is to give his life for his country. And I was thinking, I don't know, is that true? I'm sorry, I wasn't so convinced. I said, I'm not sure if I'm going to do that. Maybe I'll go the other direction. Maybe I'll go, yeah, what to do? Maybe you might say, well, some people have to sacrifice. Maybe. Maybe it's true. Still, I think there may be something greater than that. Yeah? Who made these countries anyway? Yeah? Who decided that they would be countries? As far as I'm concerned, there's a planet. And people, they just divided it up in countries. When we were kids, we would have a knife and we would just draw a square, and then you just make countries, right? And then you had to throw the knife into the ground in the country of someone else, and then you could make a line and take a piece of his country. It was a war game. Yeah, I liked it when I was a kid, but I don't like it anymore. Because I experienced it was fun to take someone else's land, but it was no fun when I take your land. That was the problem with the game. I mean, it was good to take my brother's land. You know, I liked it. But when he started taking my land, I didn't like it at all. So what to do? So I realized this game is not good. So yes, so, but the modern world, yeah? Now back to the modern world. The modern world is so fast. There's so little time. You have to work hard to just pay the bills to get any job nowadays. You know, like, I mean, with work and coming and going to work, it takes all your time, all your energy, and you have very little extra time. And you need that time sort of like to chill, to deal with it. And your life just flies by. Yeah. You have a few goodies, and they also take a lot of time. Like this, whoever invented the phone, right? I'm not sure if he's my friend or my enemy. Do you also have that feeling? You know, I used to live quite happily without a phone, right, before the things were invented, and now it's impossible to live without one, right? And yet, you know, there's no reception here. Oh my God. Oh no. How can you stay here in this place? No reception. Oh no. God. I hope you had a last look, you know, at your phone before you turned the curve, did you? If you didn't, oh no. Oh my God. You're going to miss out so many things, important things maybe. Yeah. But there must be one point, one hill where you can go, where you can catch a bit of the signal. Is there?
We can't tell anyone where it is.
I knew it. There is such a point. Come on. Yeah, so it's too much, you know. There's no more fun. There's no more surprise. I used to surprise people. Just rock up. Now, you know, it's like, why didn't you call? You know, how can you're supposed to call, we are coming. Yeah? We've just left. We're on the way. We're almost there. Yeah? You know, that's the minimum, you know. That's the minimum of at least three calls before you come. Right? It's just the culture we're living in. So like that, it keeps us very busy. All these things keep us very, very engaged, very busy, and there's no time to think. But when you come to a place like this, things slow down, and you know, it's just There's no people walking out there to look at. There's no calls to make. It's just simple. Life becomes simpler. And with it, there is time to think. And that is why it's said, the city is in the mode of passion. The country is in the mode of goodness. And the countryside especially is favorable for spirituality. It's just a bit more time. Of course, one can also sink down in ignorance, which also happens. But it's nice to have a place like this where we can, which is dedicated to spirituality, where one can come, a nice little haven in the middle of the countryside, which is dedicated to the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. I didn't open it, but I did speak about it. So any questions or any discussion, if you like, would be nice. Yeah. And of course, there are a lot of people who are all kind of aware of what I have tried to sketch in my talk. A lot of people who know that there's more to life than just materialism, and a lot of people who are looking for something spiritual. And probably all of you are amongst those people, right? And that's why you came in the first place. So in a way, I've told you what you already know for yourself. But with that, I wanted to sort of make you feel at home and say, yeah, you know, This is a nice place. This is, when you drive in, you see these signs that I guess you did it, that you put there, right, Keshava, with some qualities, tolerance, determination, I saw. What else you put? Lots of things. Courage, I saw. Humility, you saw that? I didn't see that one. I looked at the kangaroos that were hopping on the road. I missed a few signs. But, yes, that combination of thinking about something deeper and about more meaning in life and striving for that. And just the goodness of living in nature, that is a foundation which offers a better quality of life. Of course, bhakti yoga can also be practiced in the city. No problem. You can be downtown and just, you know, you can be in New York City. Right? I saw a classroom coming out of the subway. And the teacher was saying to the kids, go, 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 go. What do you think of that? Perfect education. Yeah? Now, this is what you call preparing the kids for the world they have to deal with. Go, go, go. There was also an African man, or Afro-American, sitting in the subway, and he had a skeleton next to him. Life-size skeleton sitting there. With a cowboy hat on and smoking a cigarette. And he said, and then a sign. First they wanted us to pick it, and now they want us to smoke it. It was nice. He was, I liked him. He was right. Yeah, he was right. He was protesting against against being manipulated and exploited. He was right. Yeah. But so one can be also practice bhakti yoga in the city. But in the city, you have to stand up against the current. The current is pushing more than the countryside. The countryside is like, you know, city, like, move, go. Yeah. And it's like in London, you go down into the tube, and there's these like really long escalators going down. And you stand off to one side, and on the other side, people are running down, and they just run down. And it's like a vacuum cleaner that sucks people up in the morning. Then you get into the tube, stand clear of the door. Okay, you know, it's like, it's a way of life. And the funny thing is, it's more difficult in that environment to practice bhakti yoga than it's in this environment, right? Because just the passion that is around us, more difficult. So one more plug in favor of the fun. It's a good place, because here is an opportunity to just sit down and read a book. Right? Just nothing like a book, no e-reader, no, just a book, and read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, and just let it sink in. Okay, be quiet now. Anyone's got a question now? Just end.
We need some more petta.
What you want?
More petta.
You reckon? I don't know. I need to ask Cato.
10 minutes.
10 minutes, huh?
Okay.
Yeah.
When you talk about being devoted and feeling you don't need to be devoted to a boss, say in the workplace, you feel you have to work and give your best.
Yeah.
How do you get that self-fulfillment from what you are doing?
Yes. Yeah, we have to, most of us have to work, right? Because, you know, for survival. And of course, I'm not saying that even in a material job, we try and do our best, we try and do a good job. If you're a decent person, you try and do a good job. But it's not the goal of life. So what do we do then? You know, like you work in some business, in some office, and you're giving it, and you work nicely. But ultimately, that business of the office is not the goal in life. It's just, and for you also, it's more a way to survive. So what to do? Then we take the fruits of that labor, and we use those fruits as an offering to Krishna. And then all that work becomes transcendental, because we work for a transcendental goal. So it's not the work in itself, it's what you do with the fruits of the work that determines what the work was really for. So while we work for the boss, yes, we try and do a good job, but then we take that money and create a world which is a devotional world. And then that whole job will elevate us. And everything, it's all part of a package of becoming more elevated. That's the idea, that's how it works. So it's just like a boy who works for to buy a ring for his girlfriend. That's his meditation. He worked the whole week and gave a whole week's salary to buy her a ring. Right? So if we offer the result of our work to Krishna, then it gets a spiritual purpose, even though the work itself may be material. But I think if one is a responsible person, then naturally you also do a good, you do something good in your job also, material job. But you cannot let it take over your whole life. And there's no end to it. Mm-hmm. It's like the company wants more and more, and if you go up the corporate ladder and higher and higher and higher, then you have to 100% devote everything to the company. Is that worth it? I don't know. Then you have no life left. And you get a lot of money, but you have no time to spend it. And so I think that's not needed. We can work for the company to sustain ourselves, and then with that money, create a life where there's room for devotion. A life based on good values. I hope that's a good answer. Yeah, you're satisfied, not you? Please.
I think it's more about what Aiden is working on farm or doing some work for, you know, Krishna. That fulfilling moment of wanting, not recognition, but acceptance, or to feel that you've done good.
Yeah.
To feel that you're doing something good.
Sure.
I'm trying to get that from within, but
yeah.
Sometimes I don't feel like it's ever enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've worked many jobs, and I never feel, I guess, not that passion. Like, be very passionate in work.
Yeah. Can you move a little? Because I'm talking to the mic. Yeah.
I feel happy in different roles, yeah, doing different work. But there's something I'm not meeting. I feel I'm not meeting a specific point,
yeah,
to myself.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think
there could be encouragement from Keshava, or it could be people saying, "Oh, you're doing good," but I don't feel that.
Yeah.
Just in any, it's not necessarily in workplace, in family life, in friendships.
Even in Krishna consciousness.
Even in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, even in our spiritual activities. Yeah, we're on the way. No, we're on the way. So let's say what I said was okay. You know, a beginning, where I say, you're working, and your work cannot be everything, at least you take the fruits of your work and use that for spiritual purposes. Oh, that's a beginning. But still, we will never be fulfilled until we come to pure devotional service. And that is something that's a higher level. But we grow over time, Yes, spiritual life is not easy. And Prabhupada said, if you want diamonds, you have to pay the price. You cannot get it for nothing. So if you want what you're talking about, fulfillment, then you have to give it your life, your everything. And then at the end of that life, you may still feel you're falling a bit short. But then you pray for mercy. Yeah? Because it's not only about performance. It's also about mercy. It meets both ways. So, and if you've made a serious endeavor, then, you know, you become more and more confident that even although what I did was not perfect, I tried. And then you'll say, and therefore you become confident that I'll get that mercy. I'll get it. And that way we find satisfaction. But we have to make that endeavor. Try hard. It's not like just try hard for a few months or for 1 year and expect that fulfillment will be there. Fulfillment is a big thing. But it gets better. At least I thought so in my life. As I, at one point I became a vegetarian and I thought, yes, this is an improvement. I did. Yeah, it's definitely an improvement in my life. It's like, and then I went, okay, as I went to India, I learned many things. I became involved in this movement. And, over time, it's getting better. Definitely getting better. So for everybody, you know, so one can measure by the ultimate goal, perfection, complete fulfillment, or one can measure by making progress. And the more we make progress, good, then it becomes more positive. I think we should measure both. You know, sometimes we measure like by the ultimate goal, the fulfillment. But if we only meditate, I'm still not there, then it gets discouraging. So we also need to measure by the progress we made. You know? So then that's encouraging. Oh yes, I am making progress. It is getting better. It is, and it's encouraging. Otherwise you set the goal so high and it's so far away and never going to get there. So then we're making progress. A lot of progress, actually. Sometimes progress is more internal. Sometimes it's measurable externally. But sometimes it's just internal. Like when you read the Gita, you think about the Gita, you're making progress because you're getting like gradually you get a better grip on what's going on. Yeah, you sort of find your place. So yeah, I strive for the ideal, but I measure myself by progress. Time's up. Okay, well thank you so much. Thank you for your question. Appreciate it. And thank you for coming. And nice to meet you.
So we'd like to thank His Holiness, Dhanamakana Swami, coming all the way from Amsterdam to speak to us today. Please make it feel welcome. Maharaj's latest CD. His kirtan is a very famous kirtan leader around the world. So it's his latest CD that'll be on sale. We'll have a little table out there set up. Next Saturday at Hare Krishna Valley, we have a working gig. So if you'd like to join in, just contact me during the week and let me know. So we know how many people to cook for. We're going to do some work on the garden and so forth. We have another retreat coming up in January. So if you'd like to register for the retreat, just contact me also. We just need a little bit of help serving out the meal today. So if you'd like to help us serve the meal, just go to the kitchen, help set up, and then we'll serve out. So if you'd like to give a donation for the meal today, please just leave it in the donation box. Today is the birthday of a very good friend of ours. She might be 80, does
he?
She's 32 today. So please give me your blessings on this holiday of appearance. Thank you all for coming. So yeah, just go outside, and we're going to eat outside today because it's a beautiful day. You can just maybe enjoy a few things. So we'll just serve outside, just get your meal, and you can sit out and you can have a nice picnic. So hurry, Krishna. Hey. Please come again.
Nice.
That's okay.